You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Recorded in Chicago, Illinois, with your hosts, Ken, Matt, Neil, and Jeff, this is Triviality.
Hello and welcome to Triviality, the game where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge. That is the tagline. We say it every single episode. My name is Matt. I'm joined in the studio by some people.
Yeah, what's up?
Ken.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. Anybody else? Anybody else here?
I'm here, Neil. Matt, great job on that one take read. That was awesome.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're going to pretend that that's the case.
Well, this is only episode 291, so I figured eventually I would get it right.
Hey, as long as we get it right before 300, I think we're set.
Mm-hmm. Were you excited about episode 300?
Yeah, speaking of episode 300, it's coming up pretty quickly, and we wanted to do something special you might have seen in The Crop or on Patreon or Discord that we're going to try and do an all-listener-submitted episode. We want to include as many of you as possible, and we haven't done one where it's all audio questions, so if you'd like to record a question for us and record yourself reading it with a category, anything like that, or a special message if you want to tell us you still love us, you hate us, or you don't listen to us anymore, whatever you want to say, you can upload it to a Dropbox that we have, and the link is in The Crop, Discord, and all that good stuff, but we'll put it in the show notes for the next few episodes. And yeah, just upload a question, have the file tagged as like a category, and we're just going to pick 30 straight questions, and for the 300th episode, we're going to play live, hear them for the first time, and see how we do, but also thank all of you for making this possible that we got to 300.
Yeah, and Neil, you mentioned something about our guests going forward for the next couple episodes, right?
Yeah, going forward for the next 10 or so episodes, I'm going to do my best to schedule a mix of newer patrons, newer guests, so people that we haven't met before, which we have today, but also celebrating those who paved the way for us to get here today, including our first batch of patrons that joined in our first year of existence.
Patrons Classic, I think we called them.
Patrons Classic. So the people who first joined us, I do want to give a shout out. He won't be able to be on the final 10, but David Raffetto, our first patron ever in 2017. So thank you, David. We know you can't be on one of these episodes, but we appreciate it. And
is
everyone
your mom
else
coming on?
My mom isn't going to come on, but she's here in spirit. So
okay.
Yeah, she's here in the studio floating around. Even though she's alive still, but it's whatever that's called.
Astral projection.
Yeah. She's sleeping
somewhere.
She's
been studying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So getting all those new patrons on, it seems like you can get a Disney Fast Pass to get on the show. So if you haven't signed up, patreon.com/trivialitypodcast, now would be the time to do it, I think.
I think you're right. And unfortunately, we don't have the bracelets yet to hand out, but we'll get there.
Yeah, so we'll start with our Patreon classic, creator of the Oakland Five. So you've heard this phrase probably multiple times throughout our 291 episodes so far. She is from St. Charles, Missouri. It's Liz Hudson. How you doing, Liz?
Hello. I'm
not
good.
Oakland anymore.
Not Oakland, sadly, but I'm Oaktown in my heart.
Well, since you were a classic Patreon, it's been a while probably since you've been on. Why don't you tell the folks at home a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Liz. I recently moved to St. Charles, Missouri about 2 years ago. I have two kids. I work in a marketing agency that is in Oakland. So I have still my work is there and I visit there often. So, I guess I left my heart in Oakland, as they say, but here I am in Missouri and, yeah, I'm really happy to be here and really, appreciated the ask. It was actually funny, Neil, the day that you emailed me, I was wearing my Triviality t-shirt, which I hadn't put on in a while. So I was like, oh, I put on Triviality t-shirt and magically I am asked to be on the show. So
hopefully that means great. You put on a t-shirt from us and good things happen.
So the sensors are working.
It's true. We did put special sensors in the t-shirt. So anytime you put it on, we know and we get an app alert.
Senses the body heat.
Yeah.
It sort of seemed like that, honestly.
Where can you purchase those tees?
Well, you can get them at our TeePublic store. So if you go to one of the links in our show notes, our link tree, it'll have our information there. Or you can just go to TeePublic, search us, or go to our website at trivialitypodcast.com and click t-shirts or merchandise.
All right. That's enough shilling. We're doing really good on this episode. Liz, do you have any preference on who you'd like to play with today?
I'm going to play with Neil.
I'm excited to be wanted. Thank you. And I think if you're okay with it, Liz, we should name our team Trivia Royalty because you are Triviality Royalty.
I mean, I accept the crown. Not sure if I agree, but I accept the crown.
And in that case, me and Jeff will play against you guys and we'll be Trivia Poverty because that's what it's going to be like, I think.
We'll see how we do. But there's one more missing piece. Matt, why don't you introduce today's host?
All right, we probably need someone to ask some questions, and that's going to be one of our newest Patreon members. We appreciate it so much. He's a rules guy impersonator from Santa Ana, California. It's Zeb Nesser. How you doing, Zeb?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. Why don't you tell the folks at home a little bit about yourself?
Let's see. I work in construction as an inspector. I tend to work about 100 hours a week or more.
That's a lot.
So I'm really happy to be able to have the time off to be able to be here today.
Glad you could join us.
Now, speaking of inspecting, what would your grade be of Triviality inspecting about 200 episodes so far, 150 episodes? Are we doing okay or are we structurally sound?
I would say you guys are absolutely structurally sound. Since I started listening to you guys, I want to say maybe 4 months ago, I haven't had to listen to Ryan Seacrest even one time. I just, you guys running in my car review at all times.
It's going to be our guest on episode 295, so you can skip that one. Awesome. Well, we can't wait to play the game that you have written for us today. But before we do that, obviously, we have to get the rules. Any preference on a rules read?
Oh, I'm down with the Dutch rules read. I love that.
People love the
down
Dutch
with
rules
the Dutch.
Read. Take it away, Mr. Dutch boy.
De regels van het spel zijn simpel. 20 vragen verdeeld over 2 rondes, waarbij elke vraag 10 punten waard is. Halverwege is er een speciale swingronde, ontworpen door de host van deze week. Na deze rondes beginnen de spelers aan de finale, met de punten die ze hebben verdiend. En hebben ze de mogelijkheid om 0 tot 30 punten in te zetten op 5 gecategoriseerde vragen. Aan het eind van het spel wordt iemand benoemd tot the cream of the crop.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
Thanks again to Willem, as always. We appreciate it. And with that, I think all the clerical work is out of the way. Let's get to the game.
All right, so I wrote you guys sort of a travel-themed game. So I hope you have fun. I've heard from some that it's a little tough. So let's just work through it. All right, so we're going around the world. I called the quiz Around the World in 20 Questions, and here's question one. Category is starting in Birmingham, Alabama. Everyone knows the Olympics are a sporting competition held every 4 years. Held typically 1 year after each Olympics and also worldwide, this event, held in Birmingham, Alabama this year, is host to a collection of sporting events that aren't quite mainstream enough to be included in the Olympics. Sports such as orienteering, lacrosse, korfball, jiu-jitsu, flying disc, billiards, and more. What is this sporting event called?
Let's just say somebody had a funny time and funny idea and said weird Olympics.
Okay, we'll lock that in.
Let's see. So it's after the Olympics. I'm trying to think of something like really generic name. I don't know. How about World Games?
Okay.
The wide world of sports.
Yeah.
All right. We got the weird Olympics and the what?
World Games.
World Games.
Well, look at Neil just backing into that one.
Oh, my God.
See?
That's going to be my only one.
Let's come up with the most generic name we can think of. World Games. Hey, there it is. It's World Games.
The naming team wanted to get home by 5 that day. So.
I was going to say Neil secretly has the mindset of every committee.
Oh yeah, just when can we get to dinner? Just decide.
Neil's royal privilege coming in already. All right, let's get the next one.
All right, category 2. What the heck are they playing is the name of the category, and it's an honorary Dutch boy question. I'll give you that hint. Invented in 1902 by Dutch schoolteacher Nico Broekhuizen, this sport with similarities to basketball and lacrosse is played by 2 teams of 8 with 4 men and 4 women per team and has been featured in the World Games since 1985. And if you guys don't know it automatically, I have 2 hints.
I'd be good with a hint. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know right now.
Okay. First hint is, anybody know how to say basketball in Dutch?
No. Second hint, please.
More hints.
The second hint is, I gave the answer as part of the previous question.
Oh, God. It was one of the ones he listed.
Oh, I do remember one of the ones he listed, so I don't know if we can lock it in.
Lock that in.
Okay. All right. We'll lock in.
So what did he say?
I don't know. You think I can remember 2 minutes ago?
What about like port polo?
That doesn't sound Dutch, but sure.
Doesn't sound real either.
Yeah. I think that was the 8th or 9th thing I listed was court polo. Yes, I did.
The only sport that I remember hearing in the question, because I thought it was a unique name, I don't know if it's the right one, but we locked in with korfball.
And you were right.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah.
I blocked that from my memory.
Yeah, I just heard korfball and I was like, that's funny. And then I kept thinking about it. So I'm glad it stuck. Nice. And Matt, you played this in high school?
Yeah, I had a high school teacher who loved this. Whenever it was like a rainy day, we would go inside and play this in the whatever that little field house thing
was. Oh, you know what? We might have done this too.
Maybe
we always called it. He called it Thunderdome, which it was not, because he liked to give the speech from Thunderdome before we played.
I love the name Thunderball.
That is the
though.
Most high school gym teacher.
Yeah,
thing
you
I've
gotta
ever heard.
You gotta keep yourself, you know, entertained.
Yeah.
Oh,
certainly
I've seen that. Yeah,
it's pretty wild. All right.
Maybe we should do a triviality whirly ball sometime.
That'd be fun. We should record whirly while ball. We're doing whirly ball and getting slammed.
Yeah.
All right. So Dutch, you say? Let's find some secrets of Amsterdam while we're here. Amsterdam is famous for its canals and bicycles, but even just sneaking around on foot in the Jordaan district, we can find countless cozy art cafes, quaint museums, and of course, the historic Prinsengracht, more commonly known as this place.
I mean, I've been to Amsterdam. I've been to Prinsengracht, but I am not really understanding what he's going for here. More commonly known as...
Is it like a fountain or something, or like a park, or?
No, okay. There's the museum is the Rijksmuseum, R-I-J-K-S. I think that's the big museum there. So I don't think it's that. Oh, I mean, maybe it could be the red light district.
Oh yeah, maybe that's like. Oh yeah, that's the more common name. Yeah, I like that. Do you want to go with that?
Yeah, at least that's a place.
Okay.
In Amsterdam.
Hey, what do you know? We said the red light district as well.
Well, no points here. So the Prinsengracht is actually the Anne Frank House.
Oh,
whoops.
I wondered about that.
Different.
It's a big yeah, spoiler.
So close.
So a little blurb. Though it's a common misconception that Anne Frank was hiding in Poland or Germany, the secret annex was in the Jordaan district in Amsterdam. The Germans invaded Netherlands in 1940. In 1942, Anne and 7 others went into hiding for 761 days before being captured in a raid by the Gestapo on the warehouse where the secret annex was.
On behalf of all of us, I'd like to issue an apology to all of our listeners and the Netherlands.
All right, question 4. Well, that was depressing. I think I need a long walk.
Start that one from the top of the question,
first
please.
He's not for Jeff.
Starting in France and ending in Galicia, Spain, this 500-mile trail has welcomed pilgrims from those seeking spiritual enlightenment to those seeking adventure for over 1,000 years. Bonus, 2 points if you can name a father-son duo that made a movie about this walk and the name of that movie. 1 point for the duo and 1 point for the movie.
Let's just say... It's the long road, and we'll do Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell.
Okay.
I know all of the facts he's talking about, but I don't know any of the actual answers, which is super unhelpful. But I think the father-son duo is not a famous thing, not famous people. It's just like a guy and his son. And I think maybe one of them was sick or was having some problem. And it was like a spiritual healing kind of journey, I think. Oh, wait. No, wait. Now I'm remembering there might be a famous person. Oh, God, I'm playing so bad right now.
No,
shoot.
I'm trying to think because at first it made me think of that TV show, Jack Whitehall and his dad, but that's a TV show, Travels with My Father. So that's not going to be a movie.
I want to say it is a religious thing. Like, I don't know. I feel like this guy might have been Catholic or something. I feel like my dad was telling me about this when he was like studying Catholicism a lot. Anyway, I don't know the name of it. I wrote down God's Walk, but I don't know.
So you said the person's probably really Catholic, whoever's famous?
No, I thought it was to do with Catholicism. Like the guy who did it, I thought he was a Catholic, but I'm not sure.
Well, father-son duo, I mean, the first one that comes to mind that's a Catholic, at least the father's a Catholic that I know of, is Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez.
Yes. I think
Are
that
you
might
kidding
be.
Kidding me?
Is that them?
It might be me. Oh, that is ringing a bell.
They did a movie that was like it looked like a straight to video type movie where they're walking a lot.
This is unreal.
Yeah, let's say that. I think that might be Martin Sheen, but I don't know what it's called. God's Walk, something like that. I don't know.
I can't remember. I think
you guys should go with your gut because
it's better than nothing if that is.
Okay. I can't remember the name of it, but I do remember the DVD cover of them. It's like a sign, and they're like walking somewhere together. So I don't know what it's called either, but let's say Martin Sheen, Emilio Estevez, because he's a director, so maybe he directed it. And then like you said, we'll call it God's Walk.
So essentially 1 point for Neil. They talked their way into Martin Sheen, and Emilio Estevez directed a movie. Emilio Estevez was only in it for a short time. I don't want to give away too many spoilers because it's a great movie and you guys should go watch it. But it's called The Way.
The Way.
And the Martin Sheen ends up walking the way, which is the El Camino de Santiago, which goes from France to Spain. And the English name is The Way of St. James, which I've only heard it called that a couple times.
Well, that's appropriate because my dad's name is James and he has recently departed. So shout out to James for getting us to Catholicism on that question.
All right. Question five. After that long walk, I'm thirsty. So let's head to Italy for some vino. We've come to the right country. Turns out Italy is the world's top wine producing country with 44.5 million hectoliters produced in 2021 alone. I wonder how much that is in gallons. For 10 points, tell me within 150 million gallons how much 44.5 million hectoliters is. And one bonus point, if you can tell me within the same range how much wine the U.S. produces each year.
All right, we've done some math. And when I say we, I mean Jeff, and we're locked in.
Do you want to just pick a random number? I think we'll be okay. We're good. We're doing okay so far.
Yeah, we're going to say... I have no idea. I don't even know what's reasonable, like 500 million gallons?
Sounds reasonable.
Sure.
Stupidest thing in the world. 500 million gallons in Italy, and they're the most, so I don't know. 400 million in the United States?
Sure.
This is so dumb.
All right.
Okay, so Jeff came up with 1,150,000,000 and for Italy, and then we just said 1 billion for the US.
All right. Okay, and so team royalty it goes to team poverty on this one. So the actual answer is 1,176,000,000. So you were really close. So it ranged from 1,026,000,000 to 1,326,000,000 is the range. So team poverty gets the points, and then nobody gets the bonus. The bonus was 800 million gallons.
Well, in much lower numbers, let's take a look at the scoreboard. Team Poverty getting on the board with 10 points there, but Team Royalty in the lead with a first time ever 21 points after five questions.
All right, question six. When in Rome, build as the Romans do. The secret to making this substance, used highly throughout ancient history, was lost for nearly 1,000 years after the fall of the Roman Empire. And even after being rediscovered in the 1400s, didn't come back into wide use until the 1800s.
What do you know about Roman substances?
Like concrete, maybe? Is
that... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense because they built up so fast and so big compared to every other society. So what would have been used? Concrete. Yeah. I'm trying to think. When in Rome, build as the Romans do. Yeah, I like concrete. Yeah, let's just say it. Why not? Because I feel like if they would have been the first to use it, obviously it worked out for them until everything went to crap. But let's do it.
Yeah, we also locked in with concrete.
And you guys are both correct.
Nice job.
So concrete. The hint was you'll see a lot of this used in both Maine and Oregon. And that might not be much of a clue to most people, but there's a Portland in both Maine and Oregon. And Portland cement is basically the element that makes concrete work. Here, I'll dish out our final question from Italy. This old Milanese wall mural has been damaged and repaired countless times since its completion at the end of the 15th century. Now it sits in a climate-controlled room and can only be viewed by visitors with reservations for 15 minutes at a time.
We're locked in.
The Last Supper.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. Climate control. Yeah, that sounds right to me, if you want to lock that in.
It was the climate control that locked it in for you?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple food hints in that wording. So, yeah, we're going to go with Last Supper.
Okay, and you're both right. So both teams get points. The Last Supper was commissioned as a work that Leonardo da Vinci could do in his spare time. So the surface preparation and methods he used were such that he could stop and restart with large time gaps. This application method didn't turn out to be one that could stand up to the conditions the wall resided in. So over the centuries, it's been repainted, unpainted, retouched, hidden, found, repaired, and finally restored. And when they determined moving it would destroy it, they had a humidified viewing vault built around it.
Don't mind if I just do this in my free time, you know, as just kind of a... afterthought.
As I'm doing all the other things, like inventing helicopters.
Yeah.
All right. Question eight. I'm ready for a spa day. Let's move east a bit. We'll make a stop in this grand capital known to many as the City of Spas for having more thermal hot springs than any other capital in the world.
So Liz and I discussed Helsinki, Finland. We both thought that could be the answer, knowing they have a lot of spas there. But it didn't seem like it was east in the question. So we thought, well, maybe Turkey was a little bit of a better answer. And Liz, you came up with the capital. What did you say?
Ankara.
We also went east, just a little east. And seeing as how he said grand in the wording of the clue, we figured grand and Budapest go pretty well together. So we
Budapest.
It is Budapest.
That's good. I thought that grand had something to do with it, but I couldn't connect it. Good answer.
So, Neil, I'm surprised you didn't get the Grand Budapest Hotel lead-in.
I know. That's my bad. I should have, because they have spas in the movie. They're
you know
in the
why?
Spa.
It's because he's feeling hungry.
Probably.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, we need all a dad joke noise for that one.
I know. We have to figure out what a good dad.
I don't have
joke
enough kids
noise.
For the amount.
He's a dog dad.
That's fair enough.
All right, number nine. Hungary is landlocked, but not double landlocked. The crop is frequently cropped up with questions about the two double landlocked countries, Liechtenstein and Uzbekistan. This question is for those sad, forgotten single landlocked countries hemming them in. Everybody knows Liechtenstein is wedged in between Switzerland and Austria. For 2 points each, what are the five countries surrounding Uzbekistan?
I think there's stands around Uzbekistan. So I think Kazakhstan, uh-huh. Tajikistan. I also have Armenia might be around there. And kind of running out of steam there. Do you have other stands in mind?
I mean the
Stanley Kubrick.
Stanley Kubrick, right? Everyone who loves BTS, those are pretty passionate stands. I like your answers.
Of Sebastian Stan.
Stanley, Uncle Stan.
Is Georgia a country on its own anymore these days?
It is.
Maybe around there.
We could do Georgia.
I think there's another stand that I'm not thinking of. Kazakhstan, Tajikistan. This doesn't seem right, but we can say those things. I have Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Armenia, and Georgia.
Couple stands.
We agree with you on Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and then we said Turkmenistan and Kyrgyzstan.
All right. Poverty, once again, is getting 10 points, I believe. Okay, so you got 6 points. So the hint was there's two T's, two K's, one A, and five stands. All right, so question 10. I'm sorry, this one's tough. Flying home as time runs out on the first half. Speaking of flying, in 1980, a movie was made that came to define a genre of movies that I enjoy. Airplane, though not the first, was the flagship of a series of slapstick, deadpan comedies that people typically either love or hate, but must watch at least once. The movie was closely based upon a 1957 disaster movie that the directing team bought the rights to. There's no time left in the first half, so name the movie.
Yeah, let's just say time's up.
Okay.
Okay, Liz, so I think I know, but I just want to hear what you have to say because I might be off, and I think you've been helpful with getting me on the right track here. So.
No, I really don't think I'm much help. For some reason, I thought there was a movie called Airport involved in this, but I don't know what that has to do with time or anything. So.
No, that is true. So one of the references that it makes is there's a serious movie, I believe it's called Airport 77, or Airport 1975. One of those that it's making fun of. I think it's when the plane crashes through the glass or whatever. That's in the other movie too, but in a serious way, not a joke. So the directors, the directors are known as Zaz, Zucker, Abrams, and Zucker. So I know that one for sure for the bonus. And I think the movie is Zero Hour. And that's our final answer.
Okay, so the correct answer is Zero Hour. It was a disaster exploitation movie, a disaster movie with blaxploitation and bad fish dinner that the team bought the rights to and added their ridiculousness to. And yeah, he's right also about Zucker, Abrams, and Zucker. So full points, which is 12 for Team Royalty and no points for Poverty on this one.
All right. After the first round, we have what I can assure is the first time a team has ever had 59 points. Trivia Royalty taking the lead. Trivia Poverty had a little streak there, got 5 in a row. They have 50. So as Neil always says every single episode, it's anyone's game. Let's go to the swing round.
All right. So we're back home in the U.S. And I have to say everything's a bit bigger. For the swing round, I have come up with a list of big things. The goal is simple. I provide a list of 10 big things in the U.S. and the names of 10 states. Your mission is to match the 10 things with the 10 states. Okay, so the largest Renaissance fair in the U.S. by area and attendance. The largest tree in the world. The longest suspension bridge in the U.S. The largest independent bookstore in the U.S. The world's largest toy museum complex. The largest gem and mineral show in the world. The largest comic book shop in the world. The largest trivia competition in the world. No, it's not this one. The largest children's museum in the world. And the town of Casey that fits on this list. The names of the states are Arizona, Indiana, Texas, New York, Oregon, Missouri, California, Colorado, Illinois, and Wisconsin.
All right. Those are the questions for the swing round, and we'll be right back after this break.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
All the answers for the swing round are now locked in. So can you tell us those big things one at a time one more time, and we will tell you what state we think.
All right. Largest Renaissance fair in the U.S. by area in attendance.
We said Illinois because we think there's one called the Bristol Renaissance Fair that I've been to one time. Pretty big.
We were also thinking of Bristol Renaissance Fair, but I think it's right over the border in Wisconsin. So we said Wisconsin.
Could be.
All right, I went with a little gamesmanship here. The largest Renaissance fair in the U.S. is, as they say, everything is bigger in Texas. Number two, the largest tree in the world.
We went with California.
Yeah, we also went with California.
And you're both correct. For sheer mass, General Sherman is a coastal redwood in California's Sequoia National Park, coming in at 52,500 cubic feet. And if you're thinking about height, it's also in California, which is in the Redwood National Forest. Hyperion is 380 feet tall. All right. The longest suspension bridge in the U.S.?
Since California was out, we went with New York.
Yes, we also went with New York.
And I believe I heard Liz name the bridge, and she was correct. You want to name it?
Yes, the Verrazano Narrows. It might have another name now.
It is still the Verrazano Narrows, and it connects Staten Island with Brooklyn and spans 4,260 feet, which is just under a mile.
Wow.
The largest independent bookstore in the U.S.
When I heard the question, I thought Oregon immediately, and it was an option, so we went with Oregon.
We felt the same way. We thought it's got to be something probably in Portland, so we said Oregon.
And you're right. It is in Portland. It's Powell's Bookstore, and it takes up several levels and an entire city block. I've gotten lost in it twice. All right, number five, the world's largest toy museum complex. This is where it started getting hairy, I think.
Yes, we agree, and we went with Missouri.
We landed on Arizona.
And poverty got it, Missouri. The largest gem and mineral show in the world.
Just a guess, but we felt that had a Colorado sort of feel to it.
We did too. We just didn't think about this one, said Colorado.
And I would, Colorado's a good guess, but it's actually Arizona. Tucson, Arizona has the largest gem and mineral show on earth.
That was our second guess, so.
The single largest comic book shop in the world?
Well, we're wrong because we said Missouri.
And we're wrong because we said Texas.
And yeah, if you had reserved your Colorado from the gems, you would have gotten it. Mile High Comics is in Denver, Colorado, and it's 45,000 square feet, and it houses roughly 10 million comic books. The largest trivia competition in the world?
And we said Arizona.
Yeah, we said Indiana as a guess.
And it's Wisconsin.
Oh.
There's a university radio station in Stevens Point, Wisconsin that's been hosting a yearly trivia program since 1969. At last count, the 54-hour contest had roughly 12,000 participants in roughly 450 teams from around the world.
I think I have seen that come by my trivia Facebook feed before. Mm-hmm. I don't
remember. It's actually been mentioned on this show a couple of times. Okay, number nine. The largest children's museum in the world?
For this one, we said Indiana.
Yep. We thought there's a big one in Illinois, and we just took a guess.
And Indiana is right. So Team Poverty gets the points. The Children's Museum of Indianapolis is nearly 500,000 square feet. All right. And the town of Casey fits on this list?
We said Wisconsin.
For some reason, I was sure there was a Casey, Texas, which maybe there is, but that was not the answer today.
There probably is a Casey every state, but this particular one is in Illinois. It's about 300 miles from you guys south. And it has no less than 12 of the world's largest things, including a mailbox large enough to live in, a seesaw that could rock all the people in the town at once, and a 46,000-pound rocking chair that works.
All right, after that swing round, the game has been swung a little bit. Team Poverty picking up 25 points, bringing their total to 75. And Team Royalty picking up 15 points, trailing just by one measly point with 74.
The meek shall inherit the trivia game, as they say.
All right, Zeb, take away round two.
All right, so back on our adventure, we're going to start with a Disney flop. In 1981, Disney produced Michael Crawford as a comic book artist, super spy, who used amazing gadgets that he invented based on his comics to perform action sequences, including a flight from the Eiffel Tower and a car chase with a gypsy van that turned into a supercar that turned into a boat. The movie flopped and critics picked at its carcass until its bones faded away. Can you pluck its name from those carrion-eating beaks?
I've seen a poster for a movie. I don't know if it's right. It's my gut, though. There's a bad movie called Condor Man.
That sounds good. I was thinking it had to be some kind of superhero-sounding thing. Condors, I think, maybe eat carrion.
Okay, condors are kind of like vultures, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, if you're good with that, we can lock in with Condor Man.
Sounds good to me.
We didn't know the man part. We just said the condor.
Condor Man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Points for the Condor Man.
And that was the theme song.
Judges?
That's host discretion.
Ooh. Ooh. For the no, it's Condor Man.
All right.
No, it's Condor Man. Sorry.
He gave the thumbs down, the Joaquin Phoenix thumbs down.
Sorry. All right, so number two, a Russian grammar question. What is the gerund in the following sentence? Nikolai and Alina enjoyed running numbers for their Uncle Markov's underground bookie parlor until they were both gunned down because they knew too many Russian mafia secrets.
Okay, well, first of all, I really thought Zeb was going to start speaking in Russian right then, so I'm glad it was in English, not Russian. But I think of... gerund is a verb ending in ing, so I think it's running.
Oh, that's much better than me, who doesn't know what a gerund is, so I'm happy to go with that.
All right, we had no idea what a gerund was, so we just picked like one of the many like subjects in the sentence, or maybe not subjects, but objects, I guess, and we said underground bookie parlor.
Okay, and Liz is absolutely correct. A gerund is a verb that's been turned into a noun by adding ing, which is running. And so Team Royalty gets the points on this one. Okay, the next one category is the tropic topic. So it's time to fly south and check out the southern hemisphere a bit. As we fly, we see a line that wraps around the earth that says tropic of ... We can't see the last word. Knowing that we have gone south of the equator, for 10 points, which tropic must this be? And for 2 bonus points, if you can tell me exactly how many degrees south of the equator this tropic is.
First tropic I think of is Tropic of Cancer. I don't even know if that's in the right area.
It's either Cancer or Capricorn, and I think Cancer is the southern one.
Okay.
And I want to say like 45 degrees south.
I like that.
What's the one that George still has under his bed?
I mean...
I feel it's Capricorn.
Los Angeles is like 34 degrees.
Okay. North.
I think it's like 45, but that's a guess.
That's okay. Better than my guess, so.
We said Cancer, and we went with 30 degrees.
All right. Sorry, guys. It is Capricorn.
Shoot.
And it's 23 degrees, so no points on that one.
Just make sure to return the Tropic of Capricorn so you don't get the Bookman on your case.
Okay, category, the river horse. A story goes that in 1910, a couple took their canoes out on the Zambezi River above Victoria Falls. Their canoes and bodies were later found mangled in the second of six gorges that flow away from this. It came as little surprise to discover that their canoes had been capsized by what aggressive aquatic animal common to the region?
Yeah, I would say hippopotamus. I know they're aggressive. I think there's also water buffalo, which are aggressive.
Oh, yeah. But I guess if it was mangled, hippos...
Yeah, let's say hippopotamus. That was my first.
Yeah, so while the jaguar has the strongest bite of a cat, the hippo has the strongest bite of any animal. So we can go the hippopotamus.
Yes, as we learned from, I believe, episode 2 of Triviality, Prolific Killers.
That's right.
And hippo, I believe, is the Latin or Greek or something for horse, right?
Yeah, so we said river horse or something.
Hippopotamus.
Like that.
All right. Okay, well, you guys are so close, but it's actually the jaguar. The jaguar did. No, I'm just kidding. It's the hippopotamus.
I was about to retire permanently.
If I never hear another jaguar fact again, actually, that's what I want for Christmas.
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence jersey.
Fun fact, hippopotamuses run in groups called dales, and they mark territory by flinging their own fresh dookie with their tails.
Just like us.
That's, yeah.
Last time I was at the zoo, I remember the pachyderm house, they tell you to stay away because...
Stand back.
Yeah, they will fling it at you.
More scat facts. Triviality.
All right, category. It's a small world after all. The English name for this enclave, the closest to the Tropic of Capricorn, sounds like it could be the next big area to open at Disney World. The African name sounds like it could be a vodka drink for a cybersecurity team. Either way, this place sounds like a good time for somebody. Give me both names for 10 points. And I want both for full points. No, there's no half points.
Should we say Eswatini and Swaziland? Is that what he's going for?
Well, I mean, Eswatini... I think is the, like, Swaziland is the old name.
Hold on. No. I think that's the answer. Because one sounds like a new place in Disney and one sounds like a vodka drink. So Eswatini, Martini, and Swaziland land. So
okay.
Stop right.
Wait, is it? No. Is it, I don't think it's Swaziland, though. I think it's.
That's the old name.
Is it, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeff's absolutely trying to kill us.
He really wants this one wrong, so you should just let him do it.
And royalty?
Yeah, I locked us in on my paper with Eswatini and Swaziland.
Yeah. Jeff, you want to keep on talking yourself out of it? Or?
No. I'm good.
You okay taking the points?
Sure.
All right, cool. Yeah, you both got 10 points.
All right, after those five questions, royalty taking the lead back up to 104. Poverty not too far behind with 95.
All right, number 6. A somewhat impractical mode of travel for this time of year. We travel from southern Africa to the Australian continent by hot air balloon. No worries, we stocked up on plenty of wine and cured meats in Italy. While creeping over the water, we noticed the Indian Ocean garbage patch. The garbage patch is an area of floating waste being spun together by an ocean gyre, which is a large area where two currents interact and cause a circulating effect on a grand scale. The garbage patch, usually spinning counterclockwise, is spinning clockwise. For 10 points, why?
Liz, I apologize because the only thing I'm thinking of, you know, is Garbage Pail Kids, the movie. So I'm way out of my league here.
You're thinking about Garbage Pail Kids, and I'm thinking about Bart flushing toilets in Australia. So
that's what I was thinking of, Liz.
Right next to Rand McNally.
Yeah.
Gonna call Australia and find out why.
Is it two bodies of water intersecting, then that makes the stuff turn the other way?
He said it was two currents that meet to cause this thing. So why would they be changed directions?
Maybe different temperatures. One's salt water, one's fresh water. I don't know.
Why would that suddenly change? It's like something weird is happening to change the direction of it, is what he's saying, I think. Like, I don't know, a hurricane is happening? I have no idea.
Oh, he did say this time of year is hurricane season, right?
Yeah, he said, yeah, this time of year. So why something changed? Normally goes one direction. Now it's going some other way. I don't know. We could just say hurricane season. I have no idea.
Okay.
All right, so we've often heard, specifically from The Simpsons, that the water spins down the toilet in the opposite direction in the southern hemisphere due to
the Coriolis effect.
Okay, so so the correct answer is that it's winter or monsoon season. Normally, the land in southern Asia is warmer than the water of the Indian Ocean, so the surface winds blow from the ocean to the land. The winter months bring the South Asian monsoon season, which causes a cooling of the land. The wind reverses direction and the gyre follows suit.
Okay.
So the closest team was royalty with the hurricane, which is not technically right, but they did at least connect it to a weather.
We didn't get Condor.
Man.
Yeah, you don't have to give us points.
You didn't get Condor.
Once again,
all right.
The points go to the top 1% of teams.
That's right. All right.
I'll podcast as usual.
You're right. I didn't give you Condor, so hurricane is not a monsoon.
Yeah, we can take some moral victory points there, Neil. We were on the right track.
Okay, question 7. Your Majesty, there is no second. The oldest contested international trophy, the 100 Guinea Cup, was defended and won by a single team for the first 132 years of its existence, a record unmatched in any other sport. The rules for winning it have changed frequently, but its name has only changed once. What is the name of this trophy today? For a bonus point, who currently holds the cup?
I have no idea what any of that was, but Jeff seems to have an idea, so we're going to lock in with his guess.
Might be a foolish one.
Eh, that's okay. Guess is a guess.
So I don't know this off the name right off the bat, do you?
No.
Okay.
My thought could be, I was thinking about sailing. It could be America's Cup.
Oh, I like that. That's been around a long time, because it makes me think, if it is sailing, that is sort of a sport that, I don't know, you have to have the right... This is going to sound dumb, but you have to have the right materials and stuff. And if one country won it for 100 years, I feel like sailing would make a lot of sense. So
I feel like New Zealand, Australia. I'm trying to think. I think I watched it. I don't think it's the US. So.
Let's go Australia just for our friends from Australia.
Okay, sounds good.
We also went with a series that takes place with Australia and some other competitors. And we guessed the Ashes, which I know is a super old test cricket rivalry between England and Australia. And I think Australia is the current holder.
All right. So it was the America's Cup. It is sailing. And it is recently held with, you should have gone with your friends, Neil, from New Zealand.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, everyone from New Zealand. Sorry, and, Ryan Boyd.
I little blurb I have about it is, though America's Cup was held by American teams for 132 years, the name change of the trophy was not in honor of the country who won it, but in honor of the name of the first schooner to win it, which was the America out of New York. All right. Number 8. Stew over this one. Though New Zealand is composed of over 700 islands, the country is primarily two large landmasses that make up the sixth largest island country in the world. These landmasses, very creatively named the North Island and the South Island, are separated by just 14 miles of ocean waters. With the Tasman Sea on one side and the Pacific Ocean on the other, what is the body of water directly between the North and South Islands of New Zealand? 10 points for either the English or the Kiwi name, one bonus point for both.
All right, we think we picked up a small clue in that. We don't know if this is right at all, but we're going to lock in.
Does the stew give you any
clues?
Yeah,
I mean, that must be... No, but that must be what he's talking about. I don't know if it's food-related stew or, like, Stewart, somebody named Stewart. Stewart. Do you think it's the Strait of Blank, maybe? Or... Yeah, stew. I mean, it could be Stewart, right? Somebody named Stewart.
Patrick.
Stewart Smalley.
Stewart Smalley, yeah.
Strait of Smalley.
The Strait of Smalley. I like that. You want to go?
That's great.
We're good enough. We're smart enough. And we'll answer the Strait of Smalley.
Gosh darn it.
And we just
gosh
said
darn it, people like me.
We just said Stewart Strait.
All right. So the stew was actually related to cooking because it's Cook Strait.
Oh, okay.
Captain Cook.
That makes sense.
this next question, I was going to rewrite it, but it's a long question, sorry, but several have been long. It's not a world tour without Antarctica. As I travel by rowboat, once again a poor choice of vehicle, from New Zealand to South America, I gaze south at the vast whiteness of Antarctica. We are nearing home, so I can't help but to think of the 3 year-round research stations under U.S. jurisdiction. There is one on Ross Island, the largest station on all of Antarctica, but ironically, there are no McCrows there. The one on Anvers Island, where the peninsula juts out from Antarctica like a finger, and the one at the geographic South Pole, where nobody performs in L.A. about the Enterprise's chief engineer. Name any two of these stations for 10 points, and all three for an additional bonus point.
We're locked in.
I don't know, Liz. All I'm going to say is the only outpost or station that I know is from the Thing with Kurt Russell. I think it's Outpost 31, but that's not going to help us. So
I have no idea. None of those words, which I'm sure had lots of clues. It's not getting me anything.
I heard Enterprise Engineer, which I think is Scotty from Star Trek. Maybe one is the Scotty station. I have no idea though, or the Scott station. I don't.
And then I don't know if they're like Amundsen. Is the name Amundsen?
No, that's right. Yeah, because I think it's related to the dude from Psych. Yeah, let's do the Amundsen station. Scott station. Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember the other one.
I don't know either.
Raleigh. I think that's the dude who climbed Mount Everest. Maybe he went to Antarctica.
All right, that's three. What do we have, Jeff?
I can only come up with two. You were correct with Amundsen. It's the Amundsen Scott, which is the one at the southern pole. And McMurdo is where they generally fly a lot of their supplies into. And I couldn't think of the third one. So that's what we went with.
All right. So, our poor impoverished finally got some points. It was McMurdo Station is the largest one. The clue there was McCrows because murder of crows. The Anvers Island, the one on Anvers Island, is the Palmer Station, where it juts out like a finger, the Palmer Station. And then, yeah, the Amundsen Scott, where that was a tough one to give a clue for, because the only thing I could think of leading you to Amundsen, there's a performance center in LA called the Amundsen. And then the Enterprise's chief engineer is Scott. So where nobody performs in LA about the Enterprise's chief engineer.
That's what I was thinking, actually. That's where I came up with it from that clue. So it did help you get there.
As I say, it's named, I believe, for the Norwegian and the Brit who were the first ones to go there. So.
All right. And number 10. One question for all the bacon in South America. In 2011, a river was discovered in Brazil that ran the same route as the Amazon, but was much larger. While the Amazon is 1 to 100 kilometers wide, another river 4 kilometers below it is 200 to 400 kilometers wide on the same route. For your final question and 10 points, what is the name of this river?
All right. We have no idea on this one. We thought we heard something in the question, but we can't connect it. So we're just going to have a Lucky Johnson River.
Anything
you
on...
said South America? Lucky Johnson.
Anything on this one, Liz?
The only clue I heard is the bacon is what he said for all the bacon or something like that. So I don't know. Pig River is what I wrote down, or Rasher, or maybe he's talking about money, something bacon related.
Oh, okay.
Is there a French word for bacon? The bacon? I don't know.
I believe pig in French is La Couchon. So,
okay, let's say that La Couchon River.
Okay.
Yeah, we caught that hint too, but we couldn't get there. So, what do we got?
All right, so I would never have an answer of La Couchon because I can't say it. So it's the Hamza River, H-A-M-Z-A. It's named after the scientist who made the discovery. His name was Valia Manathal Hamza.
We had every piece of that. It couldn't.
Yep, couldn't know the answer, so hard to put it together.
Yeah.
All right, so going into the final, it's still a very close game, a little low scoring. Wagers are going to be really important. Team Poverty at 105, trailing Team Royalty just by 9 points with 114. So let's see what happens. Take it away, Zeb.
All right, so our categories are number one, Catching Waves. Number two, Buried and Gone. Number three, Hiking. Number four, Family Game Night. And number five, Rules Guy Impersonator.
The wagers are now in. Looks like the teams are taking opposite approaches. We're going fives on everything except for games night. We're going to go 30 because this game has been mighty spotty for us. You guys are doing what? A lot more points, huh?
Yeah, we're doing 20, 30, 5 for the Oakland 5, 30, 20. So we're betting a little bigger.
Yeah, I got a lot of Oakland 5s in there. So let's get the questions.
All right, so here we are with Catching Waves. Norrin Radd is a hero introduced in Marvel Comics in 1966. In return for sparing his planet, he became a herald to a cosmic being. He was given his own cosmic powers and a unique way to zip around galaxies in style, looking for meals for his new boss. Name this character and his boss. Buried and Gone. Roger Williams died in 1863 and was buried on his property near Benefit Street. In 1860, the Historical Society decided to move his body and place a memorial at the location of his burial. Instead of bones, they found some nails, some teeth, and an apple tree root that had grown in a peculiar Roger Williams shape. This root was assumed to have eaten Roger Williams and is now on display at the John Brown House Museum. Which East Coast state was Roger Williams the founder of? Hiking. The U.S. has some of the most amazing and beautiful hiking trails on the planet. So often we think we need to travel around the world to find the gifts of Mother Nature, but the National Park Service lists more than 21,000 miles of trails designated for hiking right here in the U.S. The longest trails are over 2,000 miles each. Can you name two of them? Family Game Night. I feel like nothing beats a family bonding event like a good old-fashioned game night. For years, my family has had game nights several times a year where we can forget our troubles and just enjoy being together. This unusual art-based game requires a player to describe a card in their hand in such a way that some, but not all, the other players will be able to identify their card out of a group of artistic picture cards. Rules Guy Impersonator. In listening to the back episodes, I've frequently heard chess questions come up. Specifically, I have heard questions about castling. This isn't that, but hopefully these questions have spurred you to play chess a bit, or at least open a book about chess rules. There is one unique rule in chess in which a pawn can attack diagonally to an empty square and remove the opponent's pawn from the square he just passed. Try the answer in French.
We now have the questions, so we'll be right back after this break with our answers.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
We're now all locked in with our answers. Can we have the questions one more time and see if poverty or royalty will take the crown today?
Rightio. So, Norrin Rad is a hero introduced in Marvel Comics in 1966. In return for sparing his planet, he became a herald to a cosmic being. He was given his own cosmic powers and a unique way to zip around the galaxies in style, looking for meals for his new boss. Name this character and his boss.
Yeah, so for 5 points, we said Silver Surfer is the character, I'm pretty sure. And I guess the planet-destroying boss would be Galactus, but not positive on that.
Yep, for 20 points, we said Silver Surfer and Galactus. Thanks.
And you are both correct. All right, Buried and Gone. Roger Williams died in 1863 and was buried on his property. In 1860, the Historical Society decided to move his body and place a memorial at the location of his burial. Instead of bones, they found some nails, some teeth, and an apple tree root that had grown in a peculiar Roger Williams shape. This root that was assumed to have eaten Roger Williams is now on display at the John Brown House Museum. Which East Coast state was Roger Williams the founder of?
Yes, we said for 5 points, Rhode Island.
Yep, we clued into Brown, and we're hoping that it was Brown University. We said Rhode Island for 30 points.
And you guys clued into the right Brown. It's Rhode Island.
Ooh, falling behind here.
Okay, hiking. The U.S. has some of the most amazing and beautiful hiking trails on the planet. Which three, can you name two of them?
Yeah, my connection to this question would be through my friend Jory, who often does these like enormously long trails. And I follow her on Facebook and I see her progress. So shout out Jory if she listens and has reception wherever she's hiking currently. we said the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest.
Yeah, those answers sound really good. I thought that there is one called Pacific something, but we just said Pacific Trail. And then we came up with Discovery Trail for the second one.
Okay, so Discovery Trail is not one on my list. I have the Pacific Crest Trail and the Appalachian. The other is the Continental Divide Trail that is 3,100 miles. Okay, so family game night. I feel like nothing beats a family bonding event like a good old-fashioned family game night. For years, my family has had game nights several times a year where we can forget our troubles and just enjoy being together. This unusual art-based game requires a player to describe a card in their hand in such a way that some but not all the other players will be able to identify their card out of a group of artistic picture cards.
Yeah, we don't know this game. We wagered 30 on it, unfortunately, but we said Telestrations kind of sounds like a game name.
And Liz, you came up with the name?
Yeah, we also wagered 30, and we said Renaissance Cards.
Okay, so this is a game called Dixit, and you have a group of a bunch of oil-painted cards, and you try to describe your card in a way that somebody's going to get it, but not everybody's going to get it. All right, and Rules Guy Impersonator. In listening to Becca's episodes, I've frequently heard chess questions come up. Specifically, I have heard questions about castling. This isn't that, but hopefully these questions have spurred you to play chess a bit, or at least open a book about chess rules. There is one unique rule in chess in which a pawn can attack diagonally to an empty square and remove the opponent's pawn from the square he just passed. Try the answer in French.
Yeah, I picked up a spur. The word spur jumped out at me, so we were trying to think about horse terms in French, but alas, we don't know any French at all, so we just said flank.
Liz is a huge chess player, and we wanted to wager 20 points on this one, knowing it was going to be chess. And Liz, what did you say your patented chess move is?
Yes, this is just a really special thing that I do. It's called La Baguette.
La Baguette. Wow. How'd you know it, Liz? La Baguette. No, it is. It is not. It is a. So the last word in the description was passed, and I said try the answer in French, which is en passant, which is just in passing in French.
All right. After a pretty tough final there, Team Poverty coming up just a little short today with 85 big points, making today's cream of the crop Team Royalty.
Cream of the crop.
Congrats.
One day the first shall be last and the last shall be first, yeah. But today is not that day.
I was going to say triviality mirrors real life and the rich got richer.
Yeah, we squashed the revolution today.
Even we can't escape that reality.
We did. We do have guillotines.
The oppressed
for
are still
one
oppressed.
Day I will eat Neil.
Yeah. I'll let you eat me at one day. But yeah, unfortunately.
The eater of Neil.
The eater of Neil, yeah. Liz, it was so much fun playing with you. You really carried us today because these were a little bit outside my wheelhouse, but I tried to be a decent teammate.
Thank you, Neil. I have to say that geography and math, it's like a nightmare situation, but I feel like we did okay.
We did it. We survived.
I'm glad there was a bunch of movie stuff in there for you to help us out.
Yeah, I know. I felt pretty good about it, and I'm just glad that we're able to become victorious. And Zeb, great questions. Liz, we'll start with you. Thank you for being Triviality Royalty for instilling the Oakland Five on the show and just always being a wonderful supporter and friend of the show. Any last shout outs or anything you'd like to say before we let you walk down the red carpet?
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. It was really nice for you to reach out. I really appreciate it. I enjoy you guys as friends and trivia hosts. A shout out to my trivia team, the Hot Cops, my boyfriend Omar and my friends Kevin, Matt, Brian, and Zach, who keep me in the know of all kinds of different things, although they will be disappointed in my chess knowledge or lack thereof. But yeah, always fun to play with them and always fun to play with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And Zeb, wonderful game you put together today. It was great to the theme that you put together across the world, and a lot of great clues in there that we missed, some that we got. But yeah, any shout outs, anything you'd like to say before we let you go back to your hike and enjoy your walk?
I got to thank Louis, who gave me a great rules read, and Jane and Captain Tennille, which I don't know his actual name on the Discord server, who gave me play testing. And a lot of people on the Discord server gave me a lot of help figuring out which questions needed some rewording and which were too hard and that kind of thing. So I got to thank everybody on the crop. I had a great time. It's a blast.
Thank you, Zeb, and thank you, Liz. Just wanted to mention that Triviality Podcast is an Airwave Media podcast where you can find great shows like The Accidental Creative, Art Smart from Who Arted, and Ben Franklin's World over at airwavemedia.com. For Ken, Jeff, Matt, Liz, and Zeb, my name is Neil, and that was Triviality.
I like how your reasoning for that one was, what's a boring place to have a children's museum? And you're like, Indiana.
Whatever gets you there.